You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out. Ah, Rebecca. The story of a beautiful woman who meets a handsome man who sweeps her off his feet to take her back to her beautiful estate that's much talked about and much beloved by many, but not as beloved as the former occupant of the house, the former wife of said handsome man, which is all anyone can talk about and all anyone can compare her to. It sounds a lot like making a remake of Rebecca.
Just a tad.
This isn't Rebecca? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just like, look, I get you, Ben Wheatley, director I really like, always takes big chances with his films, has a lot of shocking turns in them. I get the sense that you like a challenge. And taking on one of the most beloved of Hitchcock's films, I believe the only one he ever took Best Picture with, That's ballsy as fuck, sir. Like, I mean, hey, at least you're not making the mistake of trying to do, like, the shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. I still don't know who the fuck ever told that guy that was a good idea.
It was he was on the Goodwill Hunting buzz, though. I mean, he was like, I can do anything.
Wheatley is still unproved in Hollywood's eyes, for sure. Like, I mean, at film festivals, we love this guy. We love him to pieces. He's made movies like Kill List and High Rise.
Free Fire.
In England. Man, he is a critical darling. I mean, Frank does not totally agree, apparently. There.
No, I said Free Fire. I love my Free Fire.
Oh, Free Fire. Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Army Hammer was in Free Fire.
Yeah.
It's all coming together now. I'm putting the pieces. I'm dropping the coffee mug on the floor in slow motion. But like taking on Rebecca, wow. Is there any way for those of us who have seen and loved this film, the original Hitchcock film, to be able to really separate it from the original film, to view it on its own merits? I mean, are we just Kristin Scott Thomas?
No.
I don't know.
I can.
One of us didn't see the original, right? Which is also, like, now I'm judging you.
Why are you calling me out in front of everyone just because I said right before we recorded that I had not seen the original Rebecca? I am sorry, world. I have also not seen Citizen Kane. Let's continue with the conversation.
Did you answer your own question there, right?
I think I did.
Anyway, that's right.
Hello.
And also,
I should apologize. I'm sorry.
Also joining you call yourself a film critic? No, sorry. It's Citizen Can, not Can't. No.
Oh, gross.
Frank?
I'm Frank, and I do not accept Wright's apology.
That's fair. And then the Bradley Martin.
Hello.
Always a pleasure to have you gentlemen joined here. I admit I was anxious to see this film, Rebecca, even though Netflix has a mixed track record for original feature films and definitely a mixed track record for films that feature horror on any level. Rebecca's more of a psychological thriller for sure. I know I'm the first person to call people out who say that, but it is. It's not really. It was never really a horror film. It's one of those things like, oh, God, Wuthering Heights, where you watch it and you would not be surprised if a vampire jumped out from behind the curtains, but it never, Nothing like that is actually going to happen.
It's a gothic romance.
It's a gothic romance, exactly. Netflix putting out two of these back to back. I mean, after The Haunting of Bly Manor, which was their long gothic romance, here's another one. So clearly somebody programming over there
Well, we know what he thinks the big money in the future is in. I mean, I get it. I was totally in love with Winona Ryder and Beetlejuice, so hey.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm personally.
No, but he's like green lighting like all the reading assignments he had in high school, apparently, or something like that. Because it's just like one literary remake after another.
Hey, man, I gotta say, I'm the guy who I've not only seen the original multiple times, but I've even read the original book by Daphne du Maurier, who is one of the queens of early adapted horror. Yeah. So much of her stuff and thrillers. The Birds was based on one of hers. Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Jamaica Now. And my cousin Rachel was. And I read the book.
Which
I read
you
Rebecca.
Did a review for, right?
I did a review for that, and that was really great. It was better than this, but you know, I'm one of the rare people that read the book Rebecca before I watched the movie. I watched them back. I did them back to back actually. So I was judging Hitchcock based on the book. Which is,
well, I'll tell you, I was almost more of a fan of her short stories, which she was really well known for, and there were a lot of adaptations out of those as well. But Rebecca still was considered to be one of the high points of her career, and the original film, believe it or not, there was a lot of controversy for such a beloved book with some big changes that they made from the book to the movie, a lot of which...
Don't spoil it!
A lot of which was because of producer David Selznick, who famously was warring with Hitchcock during the making of that about all the said changes, and they were going back and forth, and there's little things like a lesbian subtext, basically the demise of one of the primary characters in the film, and how that has to have happened due to various film code things at the time that made it not really an accurate adaptation of the book, but things don't have to be dead on to be perfect, and that movie was kind of perfect. So how do we do with Rebecca? All right, so as I said, a woman who is, by the way, never named.
I love that.
Yeah,
I've always loved that.
Yeah, they never say what Lily James's actual name is. She's identityless. She's a companion to a very rich and unpleasant American woman played by Anne Dowd while on holiday in Europe. She's in her early 20s, and she's like, oh, I hear like the rich Maxim de Winter is gonna be here. I've got to go talk to him, who is a widower. His wife Rebecca had died about, I guess it was a year beforehand, I think they said.
Yeah, they say about a year beforehand.
I'll just call her Lily for lack of having a name. Ends up in a sort of meet cute with them, and they hit it off, and they're kind of secretly dating while the American madam is feeling ill, feeling poorly, but they really hit it off. And before you know it, he's like, I want you to marry me, and I want you to come back to my house, the beautiful and insanely huge Mandalay, and it's going to be great. What could possibly go wrong? So go back there. It's like a, you know, every girl's, young girls, I suppose, like big dream, you marry a billionaire in this huge house and you're going to be
happy. My dream too.
I would right now do it. I mean, even
I would, yes.
If Armie Hammer was like a billionaire and came to my door with roses, you better believe I'm going.
That tall drink of water, shit.
And she gets there and almost immediately she can tell something's kind of off because, yes, it is very sad. And obviously she's being very considerate of the fact that it's not that long ago he became a widower. And obviously people really liked his ex-wife. I mean, some of them really liked his ex-wife. And the whole house is just laid out with stuff with an embroidered R on it fucking everywhere. I mean, the whole areas of the house are like, just, we don't go there. That was Rebecca's stuff. We don't touch that. So it's like this, it feels like a frozen in time tribute to this dead woman, or missing woman, actually, as it were, presumed dead. And as it goes along, you could start seeing that there's one person in particular who seems maybe have it in for her a little bit. Mrs. Danvers, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who is certainly not in a position to have any real power herself. She's just sort of the main housekeeper at Manderley, but she's been there for a long time. She was bizarrely close to Rebecca. And as it goes along, it seems clear there's a psychopathy going on there that was involved in their relationship. She seems to start to psychologically torment the young new wife of the house. You'll never compare. So where does all this lead to? Well, I'm not going to really tell you, right? That would kind of spoil the whole movie. Why would I do that? I'm not a dick.
A monster.
But suffice it to say, that relationship starts to heat up even more. There's vague insinuations that maybe she's not dead, or maybe she's a ghost, or maybe none of that and someone else is just crazy. It's hard to get the tone for this exactly right, and I think where Ben Wheatley, the director, is most criticized here was that he wasn't really sure what to sell this as, and he ended up selling it as, oh, well, the mystery of what happened to her is really the only thing that's important. And that's not, that's a mistake. And I think it might have worked a little bit better if Armie Hammer wasn't wildly miscast for this part.
Yeah, he's super handsome. Why is he miscast? He is,
but... Well, for one,
because I agree with you.
For one, he doesn't even approach a workable British accent.
No, he doesn't. He's polished and good looking, but that's it.
It's Kevin Costner-esque in Prince of Thieves kind of thing. It's like vague British.
Secondly, he's like, she should be more afraid of him as it gets towards the end, and she never really is. He just looks humbuggy at worst. He's not tortured, he's bothered. And I never really...
Yeah.
He's never really seemed like a real character.
The character's meant to be this torturous man who's just being eaten away by, you know, by his past. And he's just like, you're in this movie too. Oh, okay. Where'd you go?
Yeah.
It seems like it takes such a stark left turn. Now, granted, I am the person on this show that I have not seen the original. I have not read the book. I didn't know there was a book. I knew there was a book. It's okay. And, but... It was such a stark left, I know, to strangle me for all the video people. It's funny how you watch it and everything seems like lovey-dovey. Everything's great. I was watching it with my girlfriend and she was saying this, like, oh, this is like a Walk to Remember, like a Nicholas Sparks movie all of a sudden. Like, just the first, like, 30 minutes. And then as soon as they get to Mandalay, she's like, what the fuck? Because everyone is throwing so much shade to Lily James that she was even complaining. It's like, if I was her, I would be saying, sorry, I'm gone. You're like, this is bullshit. Everyone's treating me like shit. Yeah,
my wife said, like, she said day one, she would approach me, standing in for the sexy Armie Hammer, and say, hi, that Mrs. Danvers, out on her ass. Get her out of here. Fire anyone who's loyal to her. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, why didn't she do that? Because Lily James, I think she comes across as properly timid, but she seems like she's got this fire in her, maybe because of the narration. That it's hard to believe she would take a lot of shit she takes in this movie.
I think that's what this version does, this interpretation does so badly, is that it doesn't really know its characters. And the thing is that she is so timid. She is so... out of her depth, and the book and the Hitchcock film really show her, you know, how much she's like, it's like stranger in a strange land, and the only thing that's really keeping her there is her love for her husband, and who's, you know, and he's got his own problems, but it doesn't come across in this version at all, because his character does develop a strength and she just never really does. She's just always there as an audience member, as a participant, just watching things unfold.
But I mean, I feel like he's trying to be more modern. She's giving her some more agency. And unfortunately, I don't see how that's going to work in the story with the big problem of, if she has more agency, why hasn't she fired that bitch?
Yeah.
You know, there's a point where she's like, oh, but where would I go? I'd be homeless. I mean, at that point, I'd been, not my fucking problem. But, I mean, yeah. I get it.
It's like, maybe if you're better at your job and not treating me like horse shit, like, you wouldn't be homeless.
One of my favorite scenes in the Hitchcock movie is when she finally does grow a pair and she tells Mrs. Danvers, I want everything in the East Wing clear. She's like, but those are Mrs. DeWinter's things. Like, I am Mrs. DeWinter now. And then, like, music, and it's brilliant. But there's no moment like...
Read the marriage certificate.
But there's none of those. There's none of those moments or approach, really, in any part of this film.
Now, I don't want to feel like... Because I know a lot of you guys didn't care for this at all. And I actually did kind of like it, despite how much I prefer the original. There's no question Hitchcock's is the superior of the two films. And he's going for something different here, and it doesn't completely work. But I didn't hate it either at all. All these these actors are so utterly likable. Kristen Scott Thomas is killing it.
You think so?
Mrs. Danvers. Yeah, I thought she was great. She's super creepy.
I think she gave her way too much humanity. I thought she gave her too much. She humanized her too much. And I think one of the best things about Mrs. Danvers is she's almost like this dark force that isn't really human. And you know, she's painted one of the greatest villains in literature. And I love that she's almost like this alien, like specter presence in the other versions. And here she's like, and like, I don't want to see Mrs. Danvers sniffle or pretend to sniffle. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah, that was a little strange. I can agree with that.
I don't know.
But the, you get to see, though, like Mrs. Danvers, like that's, you do see her sniffle or whatever, and you see some humanity, but it's also a part of her plan.
Yeah.
And that actually threw me for a loop of like what happened. We're not going to talk about it, but I thought it was, she was really cold and had this like, you know, very like, I love the opening shot you get to see of her is that as soon as they arrive to Mandalay and she's looking through the window to see that Maxim and Mrs. De Winter, they just arrived and she's just looking out very cold and she just turns to the camera and just walks towards us. Like, that's a great villain introduction. Just that one shot right there. And it's like, that just kind of embodies what she's all about.
Yeah, I like the way that they humanized. I like the way they humanized her more here, actually, because I don't, the idea of her just like, well, I guess she's just like shut off inside and cold. And this version, we understand what drove her crazy, what made her reach this point, what her obsession is all about. And that doesn't make her more sympathetic per se, but it makes it easier to believe she's a real person.
But it dilutes her effect, the effect she has. It really, compared to the book, I feel, because the most intriguing thing about her is that this is a creature that's been built to be so impenetrable, and you know, you never really know what her game is in the book or the Hitchcock film. And here, she has a plan.
The aspects of her character that were not in Hitchcock's movie that I'm talking about were in the book, though. Those are straight from the book. That was cut out because they were like, there's no way in hell we're going to insinuate that in a Hollywood movie in the 1940s.
Well, the lesbian thing, I was considered, you know, it was like the subtext in the Hitchcock one. So I was considered to be like a lesbian sort of subtext.
But it was like much more textual in the book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure, for sure. But,
and in this version.
But she's more...
you know, where it all but says it.
I think that Kristen Stewart does great in the stares and the looks and in the way she... Her mannerisms, and I don't mean that, you know
as like... a big part of the character.
Yeah, exactly, because it is a part of the character. There's this one who is quite contained and whatnot. I think in terms of the physicality... She got it just right. I would like to see this whole movie on mute against some sort of like gothic musical score, to be honest. I really would. I think that'd be really an interesting experience.
I think it's gorgeously shot. I had no, and I don't mean that as like a killing it with faint praise at all. It's beautiful to look at all the way through. I think Wheatley shoots the shit out of it. There's a lot of stuff that I just went, wow, just kind of swooned over how gorgeous looking it was. I love his repeated thing of, it, where there she sees birds in the sky and they don't actually form into an R at all, but their normal bird migration patterns are just enough of a curve to make you think of the R. And I was like, that's really cool. So it's like, oh, it's not, they're not haunted. It's because even you watching it go, that's me putting that on it. And so it's also the character putting that on it. And I loved that. I thought that was really cool. Well, let's go to final thoughts. I'm going to let Frank lead the way on this one.
I think, everything we said is valid, except for Danvers. I think they got that. I think Wheatley got that completely wrong. And I guess, yeah, she's such a delicious villain, and such, she's meant to be so superhuman. And you know, she's not here. She's diluted. I think like the rest of this film. I think one of the best things about Rebecca is that the strongest theme that I've always loved about it, is this theme of the influence of the dead on the living, and I feel like that got shortchanged here. It's all about like the present day dynamics, and she's not really, I mean, the best thing about Rebecca is that she's like it's like a ghost story without a real ghost. And it's, I don't think that element was as strong here. And that made me sad. It is very gorgeous. It's almost too gorgeous. I think if Wheatley had gone with a more like a Phantom Thread sort of look to it, it would have been appropriately gothic and still very beautiful. But yeah, the cast is okay at best, except for Armie Hammer, who really isn't that great. I think the best member of the cast was Sam Riley as Rebecca's cousin, who has maybe only like a handful of scenes, and he's the right type of menace, and you know, he's in that George Sanders vein, but still doing Sam Riley, which is really, really great. This ultimately is very hollow. It will probably only appeal to people like Wright, who have no knowledge of this text. I don't mean that. That's not a shot. That is not a shot. That is not a shot. I was thinking about saying that because I didn't want to sound like
nothing about film. Like, no. Wright, like, no experience.
No.
That is the most Danvers thing you could possibly say, Frank.
No, it's not the most Danvers thing I could possibly say. I could convince you to jump, but I'm not going to do that. And I know that I'm wearing a Hitchcock shirt, and I have a Hitchcock poster behind me, which some of you can't really see. But I did try to take this on its own merit, and I just don't think it holds up ultimately to the Du Maurier text, which is the standard. So, yeah, I got to give this 6 out of 10 bosses who just stay in bed and throw up all day.
Right.
I'm actually more on the side of that. I kind of liked it. I think that it was slightly boring at times. It just kind of dragged a little bit, but I liked most of the characters. I mean, honestly, Ann Dowd, give me her any day of the week. I wish she was in everything. I fucking love her so much. She fills me with so much dread and tension. And she, like, as soon as she came on screen, I was like, oh my God, that's Ann Dowd. I was like, oh fuck, what the fuck is she doing here? I love her to death. Cause she's in a lot of great stuff.
Compliance.
And she's
Compliance, man.
Compliance, Hereditary, fucking Handmaid's Tale. Jesus. So I do agree that Armie Hammer was miscast in a way. His accent was a little like he was trying. And I mean, I was explaining to somebody else is that, and again, this is speaking as someone who has not seen the original movie and I have not read the book, but the way that the mystery comes about and like what you end up finding out, it's all so like specifically circumstantial. Like there's no way that there's not, it's one of those mysteries where it doesn't really give you any clues of how this actually like played out. It just has to end up telling you how it plays out. And sometimes that works. Like I think The Hateful Eight, there are no clues to really show you what the hell was actually happening. And then it just has to tell you, you're like, okay, but I think that worked in that particular movie. This, I don't think it does. It's one of those movies where it just kind of, well, we got to tell you what happened. Right. And we're like, here we go. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess. But I'm assuming that's kind of how it happened in the original movie, so I guess I can't fault that much, but I don't really care for that kind of mystery, so maybe I don't like the original Rebecca? I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So I do think it was also gorgeously shot. I am always going to look forward to what Ben Wheatley does. So I did like it. I don't think I'll ever really like, you know, watch this again. I should just watch the original Rebecca. So I'll give this 6 out of 10 times I probably should have watched the original Rebecca before I reviewed this movie.
Brad?
First and foremost, there are so many clues and foreshadowing in The Hateful Eight. You have the broken door. You have the pot of stew. The Lincoln letter. I mean, anyways.
Oh, that damn letter.
I'd watched this twice-ish because I started, fell asleep, woke up 40 minutes in, and they're barely getting to Manderley. So I say, I better try again tomorrow because this, whew. The second time, though, I actually also kind of enjoyed it. My complaint, not complaint, because I know I'm a very conflicted man. I was sad that my favorite scene from the original kind of sucked and didn't seem like it was going for what the original scene was. But then I was kind of happy about it because, of course, that scene failed. That scene is always going to fail in my head if it's redone by someone else. It's the, I'll just call it the look out the window scene, and you're not Rebecca. Yeah, really love that sequence. Really, my only complaint about this, like you said, right, it's kind of boring at times, and a lot of it hinges on their unconditional, unrequited, powerful love for each other. Lily James is a freaking steal and an angel. And Armie Hammer is just kind of a dick. And I don't see why she even gives him the time of day other than his money. And I'm pretty sure that's not what I was supposed to take away from that. So, beautifully shot. I love the ocean sequences. If anyone knows how to film an ocean, I always give it an extra point. Really enjoyed the paranoia of you're not good enough and the literal people telling her you're not good enough. That just sucks. Like, I felt the torment for poor Mrs. De Winters watching this and in the original. And I think that's the spirit of the film there, being told you're not good enough and he was in love with someone better than you. Like, that's a real haunt that takes place today, guys. I think they nailed that. So I'm going to give this 7 tea cozies with 10 sketched R's on them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously closer to Brad on this one than I am to the, like, you know, the film illiterate and the guy who's wrong. So
I liked it.
I am sorry, I'm not wrong. I'm just not. I'm just a purist.
I agree with you guys' negative takes on a lot of the stuff, but they just didn't impact me the same way you did. I kept going, yeah, but that's just me. Still me going, trying to compare it to the original or the book and going, I think this is a fair take on the material. It's just different. Is it as good? No, it's not as good. I mean, come on. Hitchcock's one of the greatest directors who's ever lived, you know, and that's one of his greatest movies and it's terrific, but it is more true to the novel. That's just a fact. You know, it adopts many more of the things straight from the book than Hitchcock's version did. Once again, not praise or criticism, just a fact. I think Armie Hammer is the weak point here, and I like Armie Hammer, but there's always something about him that feels like he's maybe he wasn't cut out to be an actor for me. I'm always like, you've got a certain amount of charm to you, and you're certainly good looking, but you always feel like, you know, that guy like fell backwards into this and is still not sure what you're doing there. You know, there's a reason he was never cast as like Captain America or something. I was still mad they didn't cast the guy from Chuck, but oh well. Anyway. Yeah, this is beautiful looking. I think other than Armie Hammer, who's not doesn't take you out of it completely, but he's just badly cast and not well. I don't know if I can blame Ben Wheatley or not, but not well directed for that character, what he needs to be to make this work. Because I think Lily James is delightful here. I think she totally 90% gets this right the way that it should be. I think the Mrs. Danvers character is treated really well here and done really well. I had fun watching it. I never was bored, but would I ever watch this instead of the Hitchcocks? No, I would not. The biggest mystery here isn't what happened to Rebecca. It's why in the world Ben Wheatley would pick Rebecca for his next movie to do a remake of. I mean, when people are like yelling right now on the internet about like, oh God, why is Ben Wheatley doing the Meg 2? I'm like, that makes a lot more sense to me than remaking Rebecca. What the fuck are you talking about? But yeah. Anyway, I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 tributes to Mrs. Danvers in other media. Cause seriously, it's like everywhere. I had no idea until I started looking into it. You got like Frau Blücher from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, totally.
The Carol Burnett show had the Rebecca takeoff where Vicki Lawrence played Mrs. Dampers.
Yes!
Monk had a take on it. I mean, that Mitchell and Webb look did a take on it.
I was thinking about that the entire time I was watching the show is like, they were basically doing prequel to Rebecca, which is they're talking to Rebecca. I was like, the future Mrs. De Wintash. Oh, we don't talk about her.
And there's a Miss Danvers analog as one of the main villains in Stephen King's book Bag of Bones.
Oh, nice.
You know, where it's like, no question that's who that's supposed to be. It's like everywhere, man, because it's Mrs. Danvers. She's like one of the all-time great villains. Sorry, Frank, I still thought she was a good villain.
Like that other Mel Brooks movie, The High Anxiety, wasn't the Cloris Leachman character in there Mrs. Danvers-esque type of...
I don't it's been too long since I've seen High Anxiety, which is a shame. If you've never seen it, it's Mel Brooks's take on all of Alfred Hitchcock's movies, like sort of like cool. like an airplane movie, but for just Hitchcock, which like if you didn't know that existed, now you're like, oh, I've always wondered how come no one ever did that. Well, someone did, and it was Mel Brooks, and you should watch
have you
it.
Seen that, right?
Oh, so I have sort of seen Rebecca then.
No, you haven't, okay. right? No, you shut have up. Not. Go watch it.